Hello, and welcome to another Mondays on Tuesday, this time being recorded on a Sunday. It is a warm day in Iowa. It has been a warm week, which is so nice. I mean, it's the winter, so it's not like super warm, but it's warm enough that you can walk out in the sun, and that just feels so good, especially at a time when things are not super good in every other way. The subject for this podcast is really interesting, and I hope I can keep it concise. I noticed that my best episodes are the sort of 20-minute ones. According to some of the metrics, some of the 40-minute ones are getting listened to, but if I'm recording for more than 20 minutes, it's probably because I'm rambling, and I have listened to those episodes and been like, make a point. So I'm going to try to keep this concise. I have a few different things to cover, and I've definitely been kicking around lots of different ideas. I'm going to cover four movies, possibly a fifth, one that is old and I don't like, one that is old and I do like mostly, one that is fairly new, and one that has not been made yet. The movie that has not been made yet is titled The Walter Waite for Now, from Eke Chukwu, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I, in fact, know I'm pronouncing it wrong. I'm so sorry, Eke. I found this potential, you know, movie in process through another movie that is fantastic called Zoe and the Astronaut. And I reached out to Eke on LinkedIn. We had a brief conversation. And The Walter Waite not only sounds like a really interesting movie about a boxer facing their own internal struggles in the midst of life challenges, which, as you can imagine on this podcast, I relate to, not from the boxing side, but also it hits the subject I'm going to talk about today really interestingly. And what I'm talking about, the concept of warriors to caregivers, it is, as a man in this modern day and age with somewhat confusing of an array of male archetypes and stereotypes, I've always been wondering, you know, what is strength in today's world? Because let's be honest, there's not a whole lot of value in lifting heavy stuff. But I am actually going to talk about a place where that is valuable, which is male nursing. I found a wonderful podcast where they're talking about the subject of dude nurses. And I'll link to that in the comments. It was actually a really wonderful conversation about what it's like to be a male in a caregiving role. And I'm going to talk more or less about the idea that the real sort of pinnacle value of a man historically and moderning is the sort of providing person. And historically, that was a warrior's role. You were providing safety by, you know, picking up your gun and making sure the bad people didn't take your land. And as time moves on, that is less a part of our everyday life, and now we have many, many more things that are providing and supporting in different ways. So I'm going to take that apart and talk about it a bit. The update from Compare Basic. I am working on the documentation system, which is really interesting, actually, and it's overlapping with some of the more advanced components for the web server. And I ran into something that finally unlocks the door for pencil format version 2, which I'm super, super happy about because it's the beginning of the sort of like demonstrative compositional thinking in sort of a businessy setting that I've really been looking for. So I'm getting ready to put together another demo-y something. Code.comparebasic.com will always have like a demonstration of stuff. Right now, it's a lot of talk and not a whole lot of, you know, things to play with. So I am at a point where I'm very happy with the system, very unhappy with the pace, more or less. And I finally realized that I do in fact walk around the world feeling like everyone I encounter has a knife in their boot. And that answers so many questions for me. I finally found the, you know, the side of myself I would like to, you know, unpack and let go of. And so as this next round of features comes together, I'm getting a little bit more confidence in my outreach approach. And I'll talk more about the idea of, you know, warriors to caregivers, answering that question of, you know, what does providing strength through male archetypes look like in the modern era? Back after the break. So if I were to think about who embodies like male strength, but still intelligence, there's a name that comes up for me that I've always admired, even though I've not really been like a super fan of this person. And they kind of exude this like kind of calm bad boy, but not out of control, kind of like sultry, husky, but not gross kind of persona. And I'm talking about someone that most of us first came into awareness as Han Solo. I'm talking about Harrison Ford. There was a time period in America where a good portion of the population thought he actually was the president because of the movie Air Force One. And the movie I'm going to talk about from Harrison Ford is Blade Runner. And the reason I want to talk about Blade Runner first is that he's in a very, very admirable character in the movie, which is interesting because he was not admirable in the book. The book is Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep by Philip K. Dick. And if you have not read that and you are a fan of the Blade Runner movie, I highly, highly, highly suggest it. It has kind of the same effect as the difference between V for Vendetta, the graphic novel, versus V for Vendetta, the movie. V for Vendetta, the graphic novel, the author was so upset he actually took his name off of the movie, and I can understand why. I like both of them for very, very different reasons. So V for Vendetta was made by the Wachowskis, the same people who made The Matrix and many, many other sci-fi films. And the movie was, I thought it was fantastic, but it was actually, believe it or not, more uplifting than the book. And the book was very negative. Small things like when you first see Natalie Portman's character in the movie, she's on her way somewhere and she gets, you know, accosted by the police. Well, in the book, she is selling herself as a sex worker because she needs to pay the bills. And that's the introduction to her character. Well, they sanitized that out of the movie. And they also made the main character kind of a hero. Whereas in the book, he was demented. He's not the kind of person you really want to worship. And in the book, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, it's very similar with Harrison Ford's character in Blade Runner. He's not that admirable of a character. In fact, he's pretty mean. And so Harrison Ford's character in the movie Blade Runner is someone who is admired because they're thoughtful and because they can sort through what matters. And in the end, they don't let the replicants that are running around killing people off the hook, but he does begin to relate to the idea that they just want to live. And they're finding all the scientists that may have the key to unblocking their, like, you know, self-timer, you know, you will die in 4 years. And in the very end of the movie, I won't spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, but there's a very interesting interaction between him and one of the replicants. And he kind of is like a gunslinging badass bounty hunter character, but also he's really admired for his mind and his ability to do the right thing more than just, you know, being a military grunt, for lack of a better term. And there's one scene at the very end where he grabs one of the female characters and shakes her, and it's gross. It's like whenever that scene happens, I'm just like, I admired your character until that moment. I don't know why they put it in there. I mean, it was the 80s and that kind of thing wasn't as frowned upon as it should be. But I want to talk about this as like an admirable male character who is both strong and, you know, a marksman and carries a gun, but that's not actually why he's admired. And then I'm going to go into another movie, which I watched recently, just to kind of get an idea of what was this cultural phenomenon in the 80s that is quoted so many times. And there's one scene that I see all the time, and that is the "greed is good" speech from Michael Douglas from the movie Wall Street. And I watched this just kind of understand, like, what is going on with this crazy Wall Street culture? And I have a very interesting perspective on this movie. It's not a movie I would say that I like. It's not a movie I would suggest you watch. But it's a movie that I suggest you consider because I don't think this was written to, you know, encourage people to do the right thing on Wall Street. I actually think that the idea that they showed Charlie Sheen getting arrested and he acts kind of like, you know, like a big baby and cries while they're handcuffing him and stuff, And the official narrative of the movie is, oh, he did the right thing. He made sure his father's company didn't get taken over. And, you know, the big, bad, greedy Michael Douglas is the bad guy. But Michael Douglas is never shown getting in trouble. When Charlie Sheen's character, you know, approaches him wearing a wire in the park, Michael Douglas beats the crap out of him in the middle of Central Park. And it really looks like Michael Douglas is the character you should admire. And even though the greed is good speech is the one that we see the most, he's basically talking about getting rid of all administrative staff and managers as like the way, which if you look from the 80s to the present day of 2026, I think that approach of constantly cutting the layers of people who actually do work in a company to make sure the operations are working has caused just such irreparable damage. This idea that, you know, a handful of smart people at the top can get everything done is, in my opinion, kind of a road to financial collapse. And there's another speech that he makes, and I think it's after they're playing racquetball or something, or I don't know, they're kind of in like a locker room-ish environment, and he's like slicking his hair back like he's a greaser from the 50s or something. And the speech is something to the effect of, give me someone who comes from poverty and is smart and hungry, and I will help them out, like whip all of these Ivy League sissies or something like that. And when I watched that scene, I was like, this sounds a bit like a propagandish call to arms. Like this movie is recruiting people to intend on them being, you know, greedy warriors. And I think that sort of Wall Street shark is one ethos that gets perpetuated around as a male stereotype quite a bit. And the third movie that I want to talk about is one of my recent favorites that I just saw. It's called Zoe and the Astronaut. And I'll talk a bit delicately because it does have a bit of a surprise plot. But it's about a young woman who faces a very severe life challenge. And her father has to choose whether or not he wants his daughter to be happy in a way that is part of his life the way he wants, or happy in a way that is not. And the way Eke Chukwu and the production team and the actors told this story was so interesting, because it's not just the struggle of a man who is a caring father, but it's a struggle of a man against unsolvable odds, and what that does to him struggling with his strength and his weakness. And I loved it. I highly recommend you go see it. And EK's next project is The Walter Waite, which I don't know very much about. I don't think anyone outside of a small circle probably does. It's supposedly about a boxer who faces an amazing amount of personal challenges and failures right around the time he's supposed to perform in a boxing ring. And I know there's some other circumstances around that, but I think that we generally tend to think of boxing movies as outer strength, but the mental capacity of that kind of stamina, it's really in line with this idea of what is strength in our time. And the reason I am interested in the subject actually is inspired by recent events, and the recent events are tragic and sad. There's a picture going around the internet of a masked Border Patrol agent with a gun pointing it point blank at a man who is, you know, a few feet from the ground trying to keep himself from falling. And that picture is taken just before that man is killed by several masked men with guns. And that person who was killed, his name's Alex Preddy, killed in Minneapolis in broad daylight by federal agents. What's so interesting to me about this situation is you have the male nurse as the hero and the men with guns considered the cowards. And that's my take on it, but it's also been, you know, widely discussed from everywhere that I see. And so growing up and watching movies, usually the hero has a gun, right? The hero is not usually the one beside your bed saying, are you comfortable? It's not how we think of strong men. And I wonder if this is like the apex of like thousands of years in the making, where the art of war, the act of war, is just quite frankly less valuable, less common. I wonder if medical families, and I have a few family members that are in medicine, some are actually male nurses. And I wonder if over time, if you go like 100, 200, or 300 years from today, I kind of wonder if medical families will have the positioning that military families have today and in times past. And this isn't any way to dilute or water down the, you know, the valor and honor of military families. I believe service is amazing. And I've known a few people who have joined the military, and the discipline and life skills, and there are a lot of things that they benefited tremendously personally from a responsibility level from that experience. I don't know very many veterans who come back with combat experience and struggle with PTSD, but I do believe that service may change from war making to caregiving, simply because the way lives used to be saved through war, they are now saved through medicine. They are now saved through caring. And so I wanted to talk about, is the, you know, man of the house that is no longer the man of the house because every family is two incomes, but would you consider the strong father the person who has all kinds of disciplinary advice, or the one who makes sure that he's, you know, prepared a good lunch for everyone to take to work or to school? The discipline of showing up on time, listening more than speaking so that when he does speak, it makes sense. These are all things that require strength that don't tend to come to mind when you think of, you know, male archetypes and strong leaders and these kinds of things. But I think leaders with good listening skills are far more effective. And so I'm wondering if, as tragic and horrible as the news coming out of the, you know, federal occupation of Minneapolis has been, I wonder if this is all evidence that a very long trend has sort of come to an apex, which is that taking care of each other is, you know, more important than fighting with each other. And it's such a big concept to think about, this idea of how can we be proud of ourselves given the way things have fallen out of the sky? And there's two more movies I'm going to mention here real quick. And the first is the Ken Burns documentary about the American Revolution. I watched all those episodes. They just came out like a month ago, I think. They're so good. All of Ken Burns' work is so good. Most of them are released on PBS. I loved the Brooklyn Bridge one. I actually named a component of the Seneca system the Roebling Parser, based on the family that built the Brooklyn Bridge. And it really shows that not only has American culture always been somewhat of a conflict, somewhat of a contradiction, and somewhat of a crisis, but it does really look like the first 100 years of our existence was near constant civil war. And we get better as we work together, and we sort of tend to fall apart as we break into various, you know, versions of loyalist and patriot factions. And there was one, I'd have to research this a bit more, but there was one place at one point in the revolution where it called Valley Forge. And Valley Forge was the most pluralistic, one of the most pluralistic points in the Revolutionary War. It was First Nation Americans from several tribes. It was African Americans that had been sent north because their slave-owning Southerners didn't want to send their actual sons. It was really a number of people from a bunch of places. Supposedly they spoke multiple languages at this camp in Valley Forge. It was French, German. I think it was a language from Ireland or Wales, English, and then various First Nation languages. And so it's very interesting to me that there are moments in that depiction of the Revolutionary War where people get really split into, you know, loyalist British factions that are fighting against, you know, patriot, you know, American settlers, even though they're all American settlers. They just have a difference of how things should go forward. And it's like kind of like one group of people versus another group of people. And then there's other instances in this fight where it's like eight different tribes, four different languages are spoken, possibly more. And that kind of comes back and forth throughout the documentary, which is fascinating. And there's one more movie I want to mention, one of my absolute favorites that I have watched several times, which is Margin Call. Margin Call is supposedly a sort of fictional version of the collapse of Lehman Brothers. And I won't go really, I love this movie. I love all the characters. I won't go in detail what it's about. It's basically about a bank that realizes they are financially underwater during the mortgage meltdown in 2008. And it is the 24 hours of them staying up all night and all the meetings they have and like flying in the, you know, the owner via helicopter and, you know, all Jeremy Irons gives a few really interesting lines. There are three ways to make it in this business. Be first, be better, or cheat. No, I don't cheat. You know, like just kind of like the things you would expect someone super wealthy to say. And there are some really, really, really interesting YouTube videos analyzing the reality of this video. And they talk about how, you know, these financial firms are not just evaluating the sort of trade volume the way that, you know, you and I would if we look at the stock market. They're actually measuring volatility. So has it gone up and down outside of certain bounds that indicate something's actually shifting? I found that analysis really, really, you know, really, really interesting. But there's one scene where Stanley Tucci gives a speech about his former career. He's in the risk department and he says, you know, I built a bridge one time. And he talks about how he was a civil engineer before he got into finance. And he, because he's, you know, a math person, he starts totaling up the hours and it becomes basically, you know, several decades of time that he has saved from people's lives by creating this bridge that gives everybody a shorter commute. And it's this really interesting moment where you start to realize that all of the money in the world for this trading firm doesn't mean more to Stanley Tucci's character than the fact that he used to have a job where he actually did something. And I'd like to take that one moment from the movie and just come back to this idea of, you know, the warrior versus the caregiver, sort of like the Wall Street shark versus the, you know, meaningful civil engineer. And kind of talk about this idea that not only do I think the world would be a better place if people spent more time, you know, caregiving rather than warmongering, but I think that we actually are increasingly moving towards a time period where there is not only a whole lot more money in caretaking and service rather than sort of trying to trick people into buying stuff, but I think that this uprising of values that we're seeing in our media and then also discussed online may be very welcome for an audience that I am concerned about, which is how men see themselves, how men move forward. And I think a lot of this has to do with how do we define strength and how do we want to define strength? And I, for one, am very, very happy with the idea that being a provider takes many forms, and it is fully acceptable for the definition of that providing to shift over time. With that, I will sign off. If you're interested in the kinds of things I talk about and are curious what exactly these six movies have anything to do with my company, which is a software company, head over to comparebasic.com and I will see you next week.